MANA is a private nonprofit that was founded in 1982. How would you describe the mission of this organization?
Well, David, the vision of MANA Food Bank is a hunger-free Western North Carolina. And our mission is to involve, educate, and unite people towards that effort.
Toby Ives, is that a realistic goal to end hunger in Western North Carolina? The organization has been doing this work for 30 years.
I think the vision is a little different than the mission. The vision is what we want in the very long run. We would like Western North Carolina to be hunger-free. The mission is included in the work of ending hunger. And they were very careful, Jane Curran, the board chair at the time that this mission was written, included very carefully the word, the work of ending hunger, and that's what we're about.
Each of you has been in this business for a long time. In fact, we may have, I'm guessing, 90 years of experience in the room. Is that Kitty Scheller? Is that a good guess? 30 years?
Probably.
I've been 30.
Yeah. I've been 40.
40. So that's 70 right there.
And Cindy's been all around the world doing this work.
Is there a certain level of frustration trying to grapple with this issue over the years?
I would say it is. There's no question that it is frustrating. One reason is not the work that we do, but the greater context, which does seem to defy imagination, because circumstances are different now. The recent recession, most notably, but there are many things that have been happening in the last 30 years that make poverty and hunger more widespread. So our job is bigger. More is being done, however, and I think you could say we're successful. I like to liken this to if there were not a stop sign on my corner and there were repeated wrecks on my corner, I could go down to City Hall in the middle of a wreck and get them to get a stop sign there, or I could call an ambulance. And we are calling an ambulance at the same time we're trying to get a stop sign. We're trying to deal with the structural issues at the same time we're feeding people.
Cindy Threlkeld, as Kitty Scheller mentioned, you have lived in Africa, Asia, Central and South America. How is the problem of hunger in the United States different from your experience living all over the world?
That's a very good question. I mean, when I worked in Africa, for example, in Zambia, they have there what's called a hunger season. That's the time of the year when the grain that was stored from the year before is gone, but the crop that's going to be harvested is still in the field. So that's a time when people experience hunger, and they, you know, they share with one another to the extent that they can, but there's literally not enough food to go around in a village. In the United States, there is no hunger season. There's no time when the harvest is coming in. There's no excuse when there's food on the grocery store shelves. And we still have in Western North Carolina 27% of our children that live with food insecurity, which means they don't have the basic food they need for normal human development. So although you may not think of hunger in the United States in the same dire way that you would think of hunger in Africa, 27% of our children live with food insecurity in a country that has more than enough food to feed everyone.
With the myriad of programs that exist, whether it's government or not-for-profits like your own, churches, is it fair to say that no American should ever go hungry? How can there be widespread hunger in the United States, said to be the wealthiest country in the world?
That's an excellent question, and I think that's why people who work with MANA Food Bank are frustrated. After 30 years, we can commemorate that history, but to celebrate it, that's not something that we actually want to celebrate, because we still have one in six of the people in Western North Carolina that struggle to put food on the table, and there really is no logical excuse for that. The safety net has broken down. There should be enough basic nutrition programs in the United States to make sure that the basic needs of our population are covered.
So you're suggesting the basic programs don't exist?
I'm not saying they don't exist, but they're not strong enough. I mean, if we're looking at what's happening right now with the reductions in food stamps, what happened November 1st with the sunsetting of the stimulus package, that alone is going to leave more than 98,000 people in Western North Carolina without enough food stamps to really put the food on the table that they need. That's a loss of 4 million meals in the course of 1 year. If you were to do the calculations of what actually would that mean. And when you look at what Manna Food Bank can provide in a year. That's 40% of what we can provide in 1 year through Manna and all of our partner agencies, wiped out by that 5% reduction in food stamps. What concerns me right now is that people really want to be able to feel comfortable with what's happening with reductions in food stamps, thinking we don't need to worry, the food banks and the food pantries and the churches will pick up the slack. That cut on the national level was $5 billion. We're now talking about potentially reducing food stamps by an additional $4 billion to $40 billion over 10 years. The impact of that will be absolutely devastating, but yet I don't think the average person understands that. We don't hear the outcry. We're not marching on Washington to say, look, things are already not making sense, and if we reduce that even further, it's going to have a devastating impact on people in need.
So how do you explain the public's reaction to that possibility?
I think we sometimes get so overwhelmed with all the numbers that get thrown around, with all the misperceptions of who is it that's receiving food stamps and do they deserve it. We just hear so much demonizing of the people that are needing help that it somehow is dehumanizing people to think, I don't need to worry about it. It's just, they're just going to take care of the waste and abuse, and real people aren't really going to be hurt. And that's not true.
Toby Ives, let's talk demographics a little bit. Who is helped by Manna?
The people that are helped by Manna in this rural area are often unseen. In the cities and in urban areas, they're more obvious. I think there are shelters, there are places where people gather, that sort of thing. But even in the cities, they're unseen. There are people right now within a mile of this station who are behind doors in small apartments or even in homes who don't have enough food to eat, who don't know how they're going to feed their children tonight when they get home from school. We drive around it. We don't drive through poverty areas in western North Carolina. When we go to work, when we go to worship, when we go to play, we don't see it. We don't want to see it, frankly. But they are the chronic poor, the elderly. Tell that woman who's 93 years old to get a damn job. Who's going to do that? Or the three-year-old to go get a job. Those are the people that are hungry. And they're hungry maybe not 7 days a week, maybe only four. Gee whiz, isn't that too bad? There are the new hungry, I call them, the people who have lost their job. How many people live paycheck to paycheck, and when something goes awry, they lose their job or they lose their ability to earn money. Those are the people who are hungry, and I always think of the three-year-old and the 93-year-old, but there are many, many in between.
Kitty Scheller, has the picture of who is hungry in Western North Carolina changed significantly since 1982, since this organization began its work?
I was not here in 1982. I came in 1999, but even in this period of time, I can see change. And as Toby has alluded to, in the rural areas in particular, the loss of major manufacturing and no substitute for it has left so many people unemployed. That problem is not so much in the cities, and we do not see the poverty and the hunger that results in rural areas. So yes, that has changed.
Where does the money come from to fund the work that Manna does?
By far the majority of our $4 million cash budget comes from individual donations. Actually, over 60% of it. We raise almost $2 million from individuals who are willing to step forward and contribute to Manna Food Bank. We get some public dollars. We get $500,000 from the state of North Carolina, which is very welcome, especially in this time of a lot of cutbacks in state funding. But if you look at the amount we're able to leverage, we can take $1 and turn that into three meals. It's probably the best example of a public-private partnership that you could ever find. The majority of the food is donated, which of course otherwise would be our major expense line. We have 6,400 volunteers during the course of any 1 year. So the dollars we're able to get can be leveraged by donations of food, donations of time, all sorts of in-kind donations. But the majority of our money comes from private donations and from corporations and from foundations.
Toby Isaac, has that always been the case, that the most of the funding comes from private individuals? And has the role of the state or federal government changed over the years?
Early on, all of the money came from private individuals and companies and organizations. A big change happened when the food that's called TFAP, the food assistance program of the government, was bumbling along. You remember the butter and cheese giveaways that would happen quarterly at the Dreamland Drive-In. That butter and cheese was not sought by poor people going to Washington wanting it. It was developed by agribusiness looking to get price support. And so the government was lobbied by agribusiness to buy all this stuff, dairy and wheat and all that kind of thing. And what were they going to do with it? They decided they would give it away quarterly through Department of Social Services. It was a mess for everyone. And so the government asked food banks early on in North Carolina. We were one of the first states to do this, to distribute that judiciously over 365 days a year through our partner agencies and in a way that would be better for those people served, people in need, people hungry. So that was a big government influx. Also, over time, the food stamp program, the other programs of the government that have been managed by government are being more and more managed by the private sector, namely food banks. So there is a relationship here where the government has realized that rather than do it themselves, they feel that food banks can do a better job of the food programs, from distribution of excess food that the government buys to the distribution or the handling of getting people educated about food stamps.
And I might just add that TFAP, the Emergency Food Assistance Program of the federal government, that has evolved into a program that is now acquiring the foods that we really do need to provide to people. They really do provide nutritionally dense foods that are not just to support agribusiness, as Toby says, was the intent in the beginning.
When looking at the data, is Western North Carolina actually doing a better job confronting this problem than the rest of the state?
No, there's not wide differences across the state. North Carolina as a state is, I think, one of the top 10 in terms of food insecurity, which is not a good top 10 to be in. But each part of the state has a different challenge. In Western North Carolina, it's the rural nature and the mountainous nature of the service area that we cover, the 16 counties of Western North Carolina. There are people within that area that live 30 miles away from the closest grocery store. So part of it's related to poverty, part of it's related to access both to the basic food they need to have the dollars to be able to buy it, to have access to healthy food, you know, to fresh produce and to things that are going to make a difference in people's personal health.
Toby, I've just mentioned agribusiness. The way things work in the United States through Congress, the food stamp program or SNAP is in the Farm Bill. Does that make any sense to the three of you that it's in the Farm Bill, which is designed primarily as a subsidy for big agriculture?
Originally, that was the intent, but now more than two-thirds of it is in the nutrition title. It does make sense because it brings the rural and the city folks across the country and their representatives in Congress together. So we do support it, as sort of counterintuitive as it may seem.
Let's talk about some of the myths associated with who's hungry in the United States. If I say to you this is an urban problem and I live in a rural area, why should I be concerned about it? How do you respond?
Rural hunger is probably as great, if not greater, for some of the reasons that I was mentioning. It's the access to healthy food, the amount of money that it costs to get to a grocery store, if you even have one within 30 miles. But also in rural Western North Carolina, you look at the high unemployment figures. It's our rural counties that have the highest level of unemployment, often the highest number of seniors, because younger people have left to try to find employment somewhere else, which leaves a senior population that has challenges with poverty and with access to dollars. It's also an area where the factories and the industry that was there is gone and has not been replaced. So certainly Western North Carolina is struggling. You know, we see some changes in the economy coming back, but I think one of the myths also is that people that are hungry aren't working. Why don't they just go get a job? Well, on food stamps right now, 41% of the people on food stamps do have a job, but it's probably a part-time job, minimum wage, no benefits. By the time you pay your rent and try to put gas in the car so you can get to that part-time job and cover the other expenses that you have, you maybe don't have health care. You need food stamps in order to be able to make ends meet, to be able to keep from spiraling further into poverty. Food stamps actually is a really strong poverty alleviation program, because if you look at what happens if you decide, I'm not going to be able to make that mortgage payment, now I've lost my home. Maybe I need to sell my car, it's the only asset I have. Now I don't have a way to go apply for a job.
Is the food stamp program a successful anti-poverty program?
Absolutely.
Yes, it is.
Agreed. That's why I asked that question about agribusiness, though, because my understanding of the Farm Bill is that when it was started in the 1930s, it, in a sense, was an anti-poverty program to help farmers who were barely getting by.
Small farmers. Generally.
Right, but that's not the case today. Mm-hmm. So, but it's okay that the production side and the consumption side are linked in the Farm Bill.
I think so, yes.
You think that's a good idea?
I think it is.
Okay.
And I think another thing about the SNAP, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, previously called food stamps, that program is only helping people who are at 130% of the federal poverty level. And while we get all tangled up with those terms, that federal poverty level is $19,500 for a family of three. That's not very much to put food on the table after all the expenses that Cindy has so rightly pointed out. In addition, 3/4 of food stamp recipients, SNAP recipients, are folks who have a child, are disabled, or are elderly. So this myth about the able-bodied person scamming the food stamp system is just plain crazy. And the other thing is, it is not a wasteful program. The error rate in the SNAP program is less than 4%. And I challenge you to find any other benefit program in the federal government that can compete with that, let alone the rest of the federal government. We could talk about those areas where the error rate, the mistakes, the overruns are infinitely more than that. It's just not okay to fix this federal budget on the backs of the most vulnerable, poorest among us. And that's what this move about cuts to food stamps really amounts to.
On the 30th anniversary of MANA, if you had a magic wand and could really use that magic wand and have quite an impact on this problem, what would that wand do? What would you do?
I would want a combination of living wage jobs, a strong social safety net, you know, food stamps and the other nutrition programs, and a really strong food bank, because there's always going to be a need for the people that fall through those cracks. And that's really what we were designed to do. You know, there's a fact that we haven't mentioned yet, and that is 40% of the food in this country goes to waste, 40% of the food that's produced. And that's everything from sweet potatoes that get plowed under because they're too large or too small to go to the commercial market, food that's left on the grocery store shelves, you know, the all-you-can-eat buffet. 40% goes to waste, while 1 in 6 are in need. So part of what the food bank is able to do is to be that bridge. How can we look at getting food that otherwise would go to waste into the hands of the people that need it? And I think that's one of the beautiful things about food banking, is that it's addressing a need while at the same time being environmentally resourceful at trying to recycle food that would otherwise go to waste.
However, we cannot take the rolls out of the basket at our meal in a restaurant. People think that's where most of the waste is, and there is a great deal of waste there. But we can leave that, try not to have it happen, but leave that and still find an enormous amount of waste in the industry. And the industry has been very good to cooperate and make donations, enormous donations. And the value of the food that's donated to MANA Food Bank, Cindy, what's the number these days?
I think it's around $12 to $13 million a year.
So a $4 million budget at MANA puts the rails in place so that the railroad cars worth of $12 million worth of food can ride down those rails.
It's my understanding that the percentage of people who receive food stamps that are actually helped by MANA, that there's quite a difference there, that the people that are being served by MANA are not necessarily receiving food stamps. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. There are many people, and I have a very good friend who has mental retardation, and she qualifies for food stamps, and we encouraged her to get them, and she said, no, that's for poor people, and she is poor. But there is a notion that food stamps are for poor people, and it's embarrassing to use them, though it's better with the EBT card now at the grocery store. With regard to what would one do tomorrow or today, I would fully fund and fully utilize the SNAP program, formerly food stamps, in part because it is money that comes from our taxes in North Carolina, out of our pockets, goes to Washington, comes back, and gets spent in our grocery stores and provides jobs. So it is one of the best ways to get our money back from D.C.
Kitty Schaller, use a magic wand. How would you reduce hunger in Western North Carolina, or for that matter, in the United States?
I think Cindy has named the three that are the most important. The first is to give people the life they deserve with good-paying jobs, and that's a high mountain to climb, but that's the most important single thing. Absent that, and there will always be gaps, we need a firm, strong safety net from the federal government and from our states when that's important too, that really provides a way for people who are in trouble to get help. And for us not to demonize those people and hold the programs up for undue criticism, which we seem to do in this country as a knee-jerk reaction. And thirdly, the private sector will always be important. What MANA is able to do is never going to be enough to replace those other two. But what MANA does to get help where it's needed, when it's needed, is invaluable. I never want to see the government do everything. Part of what this country is great to do is to volunteer. And volunteering means our hands, but it also means our dollars. It means standing shoulder to shoulder and looking at the problem. And if we give it all to government, we will cease to see the problem. And as Toby points out, sometimes we drive around it anyway, but it is in front of us. And if we keep working toward it together, it keeps it top of mind. That's important.
Cindy Threlkeld, as we wrap this up, the Congress stimulus funding that was adopted in 2009 included an increase in funding for food stamps. That has ended. As you mentioned earlier, Congress is considering cutting funding as much as $40 billion over 10 years. Democrats have proposed cutting funding by $4 billion, I think. Are you at work right now preparing for some significant cuts and the ripple effect that'll have on the community you serve?
We will do the best that we can, but part of what we need to do is to try to prevent that from happening in the first place. As I was mentioning, the reductions that happened November 1st, if you annualize that, it's equivalent to 40% of the food that we distributed last year. So to look at that being $4 billion or $5 billion and now potentially an additional $40 billion, there's literally no way we can make up the difference. We will do our absolute best to try to get food where we can to the people that most urgently need it, but we were meant to supplement that safety net, not to be the safety net for the safety net. It's a great concern, and that's why I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this, because I don't think there's an understanding by the public of what this really means. What is this, you know, $4 billion, $40 billion, 10 years? I mean, it just rattles around in people's minds. And I think what we have to realize is there are faces and names of people that are going to be devastated by any further cuts. And we need to make sure that people understand that. There's no there's no march on Washington, you know, to prevent stuff, you know, cuts to food stamps. It's just become so politically volatile that people kind of throw up their hands and think, boy, I don't know, but I sure hope the churches and the food banks are going to be there to help.
Kitty Scheller, with that, if I say to you, well, it sounds like a lot of money, $40 billion over 10 years, but it's just a few dollars a month in cuts to the that family of three you mentioned earlier. It's just a few dollars a month less.
For many of us, a few dollars in our food budget is not a big problem. For the folks we're talking about, a few dollars is a great deal. It's a big thing. And I would just like to say that the federal government's budget is a moral document, and what's about to happen to it if we don't take action is an absolute immoral act. It's just not okay. It's not okay to say that everybody has to suffer when there are so many people in this country that are so far from suffering, it's not even funny. We don't talk about the need to increase the budget to do what that budget needs to do. We only talk about cutting it, and that's only part of the story. And then when we do talk about cutting it, acting as though every part of the budget has an equal responsibility to be cut, it's an immoral act. That's it.
Kitty Scheller is the former executive director of MANA. Toby Ives is the former executive director of MANA. And Cindy Threlkeld is the executive director of MANA Food Bank, serving Western North Carolina. Thank you very much.